Stop.
Welcome to They're Playing Our Song, the podcast where your song becomes our song. I'm Robert Perry Cruz, your host, and I'm with you today for a very, very special episode of the show. I was very fortunate to get in touch with one of my all-time favorite writers, Tom Chick, online, and he was gracious enough to offer to join me for the show. What was going to be, a very, very, very brief podcast about his favorite song really turned into a very, very excellent conversation. So thanks, Tom, for all of your time, and I hope the rest of you all really enjoy this real epic length discussion of the Pixies' Where Is My Mind. So without further ado, here's the interview. I am on Skype with games writer, games critic, Tom Chick. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Rob. As I've said before, I love that you do this podcast, and I'm super psyched that you're asking me to be a part of it.
Oh, well, I'm very honored. I'm hoping I don't go Mark Duplass from Creep on you during our I'll try. So for folks who don't know you, you've been writing about games for a while now. How did you get into that field?
Let's see, my first, if I do math here, I've done it 22 years. My first paid review where someone was like, hey, hey, we'll give you a free game if you write about it. The first instance where someone was like, hey, we'll actually pay you money if you write about a game, was a flight simulator back in 1994. So for 22 years, I've made more or less a living. I've done other things as well, basically writing about games, because I grew up playing video games. I was sort of on the cusp of the generation of people who had that as – some of us had that as kids, like with arcade machines and stuff. So as I was living in Los Angeles and was doing the silly actor thing for a while, rather than having to wait tables, I could make money writing about games, and I've been doing that ever since, and I run my own site called Quarter to Three now, and that's kind of my full-time job.
Excellent. Now, I first saw your writing. My mom got a free subscription to Computer Games Magazine for like 2 years. I don't know where it came from, but I really loved that magazine, and you had a column. You did reviews, but you had a column in the back, the three-finger salute.
Right, exactly. I always hated that title. But yeah, I got to do columns, I got to do reviews and features and stuff. I'm curious, Rob, how does your mom get a subscription to Computer Games Magazine?
I don't know. Oh, it was just all of a sudden, she's like, I got this magazine, would you like to read it? And I was like, yeah, whatever, sure, computers, I like those.
I think your mom strikes me as pretty cool.
She is very cool. It is true. I don't know what she bought that some marketer said computer games that's this lady's thing, but it was fortunate.
One of the coolest gifts I ever got from my mom, because moms normally give you, we're dudes, give us things that we're like, oh, mom, really? I remember once, and it was Valentine's Day too. I must have been 14 or something. My mom, and she totally nailed it. I don't know how she knew to get me this. She got me a model airplane kit, like a model of a B-25 bomber, when I was totally into like World War II planes and models. Mm-hmm. And that was like the coolest, like that was probably, I had the highest estimation ever of my mom at that point. I mean, it was like, oh my God, mom, how could you know so well exactly what I wanted? So yeah, every now and then moms will come out with something awesome, like a copy of Computer Games Magazine or a bomber. Yeah.
Oh, it was beautiful. Well, I actually almost got some model planes myself this weekend.
Wow, those are still around even. I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah. you could get all sorts of things. But yeah, we were at my son's in Cub Scouts because I never learned to do anything handy. So I thought, well, he should probably learn to live outside in case of, zombie
warfare and whatnot. So we had to do a camp out at one of the battleships near us, and they had all these model planes, and I was going to buy a bunch, but I realized I was probably the only one who wanted to build them, so that's... I can only use that excuse with my wife so many times.
Rob,
she's a little tired
part
of that.
When you have kids, you can force them to do things that you want to do. I mean, you're the boss. You could have pressed them into service to do a model. You should still consider that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have a confession to make in terms of I've same as you, love video games my whole life. And my oldest son, I didn't want him to play too many games. You know, I wanted to make sure he went outside. And when it came time to finally get him into video games, he will only play sports games. He will play Madden. He will play MLB The Show. That's it. Doesn't want to have anything else playing. It's embarrassing.
But yeah, like your kid might be a closet jock.
He is. He somehow can play sports. I don't know where he learned it, because it's not in my genes at all.
You need to let your nerdy computer game mom get her hands on him and inculcate him with some nerdiness.
He's first grandkid, so she just does whatever he wants. Right. So she's just making it worse. So Tom, you wrote for computer games for a long time. I know Quarter to Three's been around for quite some time too, because I remember reading that while I was in college.
Yeah, we started that in the 20th century. We started that last century, Bob. Yeah, that's been around for more or less. Like I've given it different. Like at times I've spent more energy than other times on it, but right mm-hmm. now it's like a full blown website, and we get content every day, and we have a couple of podcasts that we do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we're getting on 20 years old, probably like 18 years old or something. Yeah, so
that's amazing. I know you did some writing for Sci-Fi Channel for a while, which was nice, because I got like you were pumping out content almost every day, just like your voice so frequently with those like little tidbits they wanted you to do on that. What was it called?
I hate the name of that as well. Fidget. And it's Fidget. The thing is, Rob, you get together like because Sci-Fi Channel is a subsidiary of NBC Universal, so you get together with people who are like from this big corporate background, and they have to figure out, okay, we're going to do a blog about games, you're in charge of it, you write whatever you want, but what are we going to call it? And it has to be something, of course, that they can trademark, that the domain name is available. So I remember before launching this, going down with this list of just horrible, terrible names, like... So she did something like Thumb Jockey was one of the things that they were going to play. And eventually they came up with the word fidget, and not even spelled correctly, like a misspelling of the word fidget. So that's what I was writing under for several years before that got closed down. But yeah, that was my Sci-Fi Channel gig for a while. Yeah.
Well, that's good. But yeah, I check out Quarter to Three. Certainly the podcasts your movie podcast was the first email I think I wrote to a podcast ever.
Wow,
when you guys
cool.
3x3s. Yes.
Yeah, we know you're... I mean, we certainly have done our fair share of stumbling over your last name. There's a lot of strange words and letters in there that I imagine confuse people. But yeah, we love when people like you write in. So my first love was kind of movies, even before video games. I don't know if it's time to segue, but that's what kind of led me to the song we're going to talk about today, by the way, is being really into movies. And sometimes, and I don't know if other people are like this, but sometimes the music I like comes from movies. So that's what we'll be talking about in a little bit, whenever you're ready today. Yeah.
Oh, you know, Tom, you're the pro. So I think perfect time to segue. So today we're going to be talking about Where Is My Mind by the Pixies from their 1988 album Surfa Rosa, which I, you know, just hearing that album again the other day and listening to Where Is My Mind, I can't believe that's 1988. That just sounds just very timeless. You know, you could tell me that came out last year and I'd believe you. It's so different.
So I'm going to have a couple of confessions to make here, Rob. One, I came very late to the Pixies, and I'd love to tell you about the story because it's really crazy.
Go for it.
And two, my exposure to them was never in the form of albums. Like, only because I was listening to it for the podcast did I realize, oh, yeah, from Surfa Rosa. If you had asked me, you know, last week, okay, what album is Where's My Mind on, I would have had no idea. I mean, I could have named the four Pixies albums, but I don't think of them as discrete entities, because when I was exposed to the Pixies, when I discovered them, I just bought all four albums. You know, you rip them, you put them on iPod, you listen to it on shuffle, or you just run through the whole list. So I never had this sense of the Pixies as having discrete albums. And I know some people, like you talk about Surfer Rosa as being timeless, some people think of like Surfer Rosa versus Trompe Le Monde versus Bossa Nova, and I just don't have that in my head. It just doesn't exist, that category.
Okay. So the modern view of music where the album's sort of gone out the window.
I guess, yeah, albums are dead, aren't they? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I buy an album from a band I like, and I just put it into my mix of 1,000 songs, and someday it'll probably pop up, but I have no sense of cohesion. So it's a little sad, but, I mean, that's where we are.
And there are still some, like, there are still people that do, like, concept albums that I kind of fit together that way. Like, I don't know if you're into Eminem, but Eminem does a mm-hmm. lot of, like, his the Marshall Mathers LP, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a story. Like, that's a super, mm-hmm. super self-contained concept album. Mm-hmm. So unless it's like that for me, if it's just singles, I just have no sense for where it belongs. yeah, so.
So you started talking about when you got into the Pixies. So talk. Tell me more about kind of that experience of getting into them.
All right, so I imagine this is fairly common. Like you'll see a movie and there'll be a song in the movie, and that's what will make you resonate with the song, because the movie has mm-hmm. an impact on you, and so you like the song. The same way, maybe not to the same degree, but the same way maybe the first time you get your heart broken, you remember what music you were into. So something that has a strong impact on you, the music that coincides with that impact can become important. So I distinctly remember seeing Fight Club, the David Fincher movie, for the first time. I was actually writing for it was called Daily Radar. So I forget the site, but I was writing for a site that's mm-hmm. long since gone, and I wasn't part of press screenings. So they would have me go on a Friday morning, the very first showing, to see a movie, and then I would write up the review that afternoon. It was almost like actual newspaper work, and then turn it around real quickly so that they could post it before 5 p.m. that day. And I remember going to see Fight Club and just kind of being flummoxed. Like, I have no idea. I mean, this movie is blowing my mind. I have no idea what to write. And that was one, too, where I think I even told the guy, look, I can't get this to you by 5 p.m. I mean, they weren't paying me enough for it to matter. I was just like, you know what, I'll get it to you later over the weekend. But it was one of those movies where I just really it's like a grenade. Like, you pull the pin and you throw it, and it takes a while before it goes off. And when it does, wow. And the final image, of course, which everybody knows from Fight Club, is where David Fincher used that Pixies song, Where's My Mind? And it's mm-hmm. a hugely powerful moment. And Fincher obviously wanted to leave you. Like, he wanted the final resonance, the final impact of this movie to be to coincide with that Pixies song. And he's even talked about how Fight Club is for him kind of like Dr. Strangelove. And they're both movies that end with bombs going off that are going to reboot the world. And in Dr. Strangelove, it ends with Vera Lynn's song, We'll Meet Again, completely out of sorts with the violence of all the nuclear explosions. And there's a similar thing with Fight Club, where these buildings are collapsing and there's this spectacular demolitions of a city, and that kind of meditative, ethereal bit from Where's My Mind is going off. It's like, why is this? So Fight Club for me is a psychological apocalypse movie mm-hmm. about the end of the world. And even if I can get into just a little, I studied some theology stuff in school, and the word apocalypse is actually, it's a Greek word that comes from the idea of revealing something, of a revelation, and that's why that bit of the Bible, the Revelations of St. John, that's referred to as the apocalypse. So even in Fight Club, there's an apocalypse in the sense that it's the end of the world, but it's also an apocalypse in the sense that the narrator has basically revealed to himself, he has discovered how insane he is, how his personality is split into two parts. And this all comes together at the top floor of a skyscraper. You know, he's not wearing any pants. His face has just been beat to a pulp. His eye is swollen. There's a gunshot hole in the side of his head, and he's, you know, there's like stuffed in these wadded napkins into it.
That scene was, that's tough with the napkins.
And yeah, exactly, because he's got that gunshot hole in his cheek, and it looks super painful, and when he talks, it just sounds awful. And at this point, the girl that he realizes that he's in love with, that he's had this weird back and forth with throughout the movie because he's basically crazy, she gets brought up to him, and she doesn't know what's going on, and she's a little freaked out that he looks so beat up, and he says, oh, I shot myself, and she's like, what happened? And just as he assures her that everything's going to be okay, because it is. He now knows that he is, he knows who he is, and he knows what he's done. He reassures her everything's going to be okay, and as he's saying that, you hear this very light guitar strumming in the background, which, as we now know, that's how Where's My Mind opens. And then, as soon as the explosions start going off outside the window and these other skyscrapers start to collapse, that iconic siren kind of sound. And I don't know if it's lead guitar or rhythm guitar. Do you know what I'm talking about, Rob? That da-na-na-na.
The background. I think it's just the... It must be lead guitar, because I think Black Francis did vocals and some guitar, and they had a guitarist, and I think that would make that other person the lead guitarist by the band Logic, I know.
So that would be like, because I think his name was Joey Santiago. That would be Joey Santiago doing that iconic siren noise.
I think so. That's okay. Ding, ding. Yeah, the little kind of the background riff, or the ooh.
Well, the ooh, I imagine, is probably Kim Deal. I don't know if they had backup singers, but just that and I can't really do a rendition of it, but it really does sound like a European siren going off. And it has this urgency to it. It's very piercing, kind of.
Okay, I get what you. Yeah, the kind of the way, whatever the filter they're using on the guitar to kind of get that extra sound.
Yeah, it really does sound like I don't know. I have no technical knowledge of music, so I have no idea how they do this. But I think anybody who knows Where's My Mind knows, is it just like two notes? I mean, they know that kind of pulsing siren guitar thing that it does. And that begins just as the buildings start collapsing. Now, post 9/11, this imagery has a very different connotation.
When was Fight Club? 1999?
It was 2000, maybe? It was like shortly before 9/11. Like there was a good year gap before 9/11, at least. So you watch that now, and it's a little, you know, when it was shot, when David Fincher showed us that, there was still this idea of a collapsing skyscraper as something really cool and exciting, because, you know, Demolitions was awesome to watch. And, you know, post 9/11, there's a very different connotation. It looks very different. So when you watch Fight Club now, there's a couple of important things you have to know. One, this is pre 9/11, and two, more importantly, and if you don't watch the movie closely, you may not get this. And I've even had arguments with friends about this. It's very, very clear in the movie that those buildings are empty. You know, there's not people out there dying. That's not what you're seeing. They've clearly made a point that. And it might not be realistic, but in the fiction of the movie, they've said, we made sure nobody's in there, that nobody's going to get hurt. They're not killing
people. Their guys are, like, the only guys there, the security guys, are their guys. They're part of Project Mayhem, right?
Exactly. They've infiltrated, like, the janitors, the security guards. They know what they're doing. They've set the explosives in these buildings, and they're not killing people. So when you watch the end of Fight Club, you're not seeing what we saw in 9/11, where buildings are collapsing, and, oh, my God, there's people in there. That's clearly... David Fincher didn't want you to think that. But what you also have to know is that these buildings collapsing is indeed the end of the world, because also in the context of the story, these buildings are the repositories for the financial infrastructure of the world's largest economy. Basically, the world lifeblood economy is centered. This is the heart that makes them beat, and this collapse is Project Mayhem rebooting society. So the bombs are going off, the skyscrapers start collapsing. I don't think Edward Norton's character has a name. He's just like the narrator. He takes Helena Bonham Carter's hand, and they sit there holding hands, watching this world collapsing as the music starts. And he says to her, you met me at a very strange time in my life. It's a great line. It's the last line of the movie. And they stand there watching the buildings fall, and it's like this new Adam and Eve, kind of. And that's an incredible moment. It's the payoff moment for Fight Club. It's the culmination of Project Mayhem's plots. It's the narrator realizing who he is and reconciling with this woman he loves and rebooting the world. And all the message that Tyler Durden has given, all of that is going to be realized in the destruction of the world here. So, hugely powerful moment. If you're into the movie, you can't not be influenced by the Pixies song at that point.
That's true.
And you're hearing this song with very distinct, clear, sharp lyrics about someone who has gone crazy, and he's like asking, you know, what happened to me? But he's kind of okay with it. And it very much fits with Edward Norton's state of mind at that point. So I remember seeing the movie and thinking, oh my gosh, that's a great song. who is this? Who's doing this song? I have to find out who this is. Later found out it's a band called the Pixies. And I thought two things. The first thing I thought is, yeah, that's a silly name. You know, why would you name yourself the Pixies? And then the second thing, Rob, and here's where I have a theory, but the second thing I thought was, this must be some new group, and what a coup that they made it into a David Fincher movie. You know, where did these guys come from? I want to know more about them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, imagine my surprise to discover they had basically come and gone about 10 years ago. And I had never even heard of them, Rob. Which has got to be crazy, right? Like, how do you live through that period of time and not know who the Pixies are?
Well, I think with the Pixies, you know, honestly, that's where I came to them too, Tom, was Fight Club. I mean, similarly, I saw Fight Club at a period of my life when I would have been prime material to join Project Mayhem. I hated everything. I wanted to destroy more than build at that point. I think I worked at, do you remember Funko Land?
I don't even know what that is.
GameStop?
Funko?
Oh, it's a video game store. Funko Land. Yeah, they sold used games. They were like the first place to do used games way back when.
Wow, no, I don't know them.
Oh, maybe it was out here, but they became GameStop, or they got bought by GameStop.
Okay, okay.
So I worked there at the time. I was the assistant manager, and we, you know, we're done with another day of like little kids coming in and asking about Pokemon, and oh, it's terrible. And we just like, well, we want to go to a movie, and we went to Fight Club, and we both just sat there and were just so enthralled by that vision. But like you were saying, that apocalypse, that starting over, just getting rid of everything that just seemed wrong with the world. And yeah, that same thing that when the Pixies song came on, the siren call, just the way the drums kind of just come in, and you know, I was just hooked. Like, what's this band? But the same thing as you, who are these Pixies? And the only reference I saw about them was Nirvana. Kurt Cobain would cite them as, oh, I loved the Pixies. That's where I got a lot of the sound for Nevermind.
Oh.
They're kind of quiet, then they're loud. They're quiet and they're loud, and that's something I got from the Pixies. And I was like, wow, okay, I feel really I'm so uncool that this band was, you know, the band you were supposed to know if you were a cool rock star, but nobody else had ever heard of them before, it seemed.
Well, do you get guff like would most people have known who the Pixies were at that time? Like, is that weird for us to have no idea who this group was?
No, I don't think so. Because
okay.
I remember when I got way into them. Like, I listened to Surfer Rosa. I went out and got Surfer Rosa, and I got Doolittle. And I just listened to them over and over and over. And I was, as far as I knew, the only person who knew who the Pixies were. And I said, I got to try to find a T-shirt. I got to make them my band as quickly as possible so I could be way cooler than everybody I know.
Well, what I was thinking is, because before, when I was like in high school, I was also into that whole like "fuck you to the world" phase. And for me, the way it exhibited itself was like with super hardcore punk, like Black Flag and Suicidal Tendencies and stuff like that. And it's basically just dudes making noise and yelling, "Yeah, fuck you!" And I sort of resonated with that, and it was fun, and I enjoyed it. But then when my musical taste, like when I went into college, the period when the Pixies would have been around. I don't know if it's okay to say this on the podcast, but I was like I went through a long stoner phase, like through college, and mm-hmm. and for me, the music at the time when the Pixies would have been playing that I was into was really old stoner stuff, like the Doors and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd.
Oh yeah.
I didn't listen to any new music at that point. I just went through that whole, you know, 4, 5, 6, whatever years, just listening to old music and being into that. So my theory is that maybe that's why I completely missed the Pixies. But yeah, I don't know.
I guess, if you were going to know about them, I assume in 88 you would have had to be in a band actually they're in the Boston area. So if you lived around or kind of where I am, you might have heard about them, or you might have known about them through like a battle of the bands, and or you were in college and but kind of in tune. Like there are always those kids who
knew
bands I'd never heard of in college. And, you know, some of them I liked, some of them I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever heard, but hey, I've never heard of them, therefore they must be good. And I'm just, you know, I'm a plebeian. I don't understand your music. You know, you elite music guy down the hall.
Cause I guess, yeah, like college rated, but we knew about Nirvana though. I guess Nirvana got airplay. Like I think of Nirvana is also in that same period, but, I guess the Pixies, I mean, they're both alternative rock in a way, but I guess the Pixies were even more alternative or more underground or too underground or something.
Because that's the way it is with so much music, though. It's you've got this undercurrent. You know, it's not that the first time, I don't know if Taylor Swift's a great example, but kind of took like a country western slash pop. She's not the first person to do that, but for whatever reason, bam, she's the biggest person to do that. I think same with Nirvana. Plenty of other bands that sounded like Nirvana, they were just the first one that had that crossover appeal that everybody had to listen to that album.
Right.
I was in Seattle for a wedding, and they have there's this cool museum there. It's like a science fiction music museum, mm-hmm. and they had an exhibit on Nirvana, and they had a whole poster on these are the influences of Nirvana, and they had a whole bunch of different bands. I think like Husker Du
sure,
was
yeah.
in there, and certainly the Pixies. And it was sort of cute to see them sort of relegated to this little footnote of like, here are the Pixies, most important for having an influence on Nirvana.
Right, like they were just a stepping stone for Nirvana to get where they needed to get. That's awesome you mentioned Husker Du, because I think Black Francis has cited like Husker Du, and even Black Flag, by the way. Because there are parts of like Pixies where he does this almost not Henry Rollins level, but well, yeah, maybe like there are some Pixies songs where he does that like yelling, like crazy punk rock yelling. Which, by the way, is in evidence nowhere in Where's My Mind. Like Where's My Mind seems unique amongst Pixies songs for this kind of meditative, calmer aspect to it. Because a lot of mm-hmm. Pixies does. He does have the screaming, like, you know, like even in Gouge Away, there's a, you know, the final verse, he like screams that, this monkey's gone to heaven, you know, they count up the numbers, and when he gets to seven, there's that screaming that he does, Debaser, you know, he's constantly screaming in that, but he doesn't do any of that stuff in Where Is My Mind. It's super somber in comparison. I mean, there are other songs, like there are other Pixies songs that also where he doesn't scream, but they're almost straight up like pop or jaunty, and I actually don't like. There's a song called "There Goes My Gun." Here Comes Your Man is another one. Like they're super bubblegummy Pixies, I guess you might say.
It's strange though. I mean, I was just kind of going through the track list on specifically Surfer Rosa the other day, and thinking about there are a couple songs that have a similar sort of that weird ethereal tunes, so like Bone Machine a little bit. What was the other one I had? Even things like Break My Body.
Right.
That just they're weird. They're out there, but they don't have that same tone. Like you were saying, they don't sound as just really sedate. I think the only big sound in Where's My Mind is those initial drums, and then the little riff in the middle. You know, the little bridge. But for the most part, it's just kind of pretty quiet. Gets up a little bit, but yeah, he's not screaming about anything. It's just sedate. I don't know if it just goes with the theme of the song. There's a lot of water imagery, so maybe he's trying to just get that sense of I'm floating and
right,
out there.
And it is I believe this is on Wikipedia or something where Black Francis talked about scuba diving actually, and that's part of what was referred to. And it's the most random lyric too. I was in the Caribbean swimming. Like there's something about animals hiding behind the rocks while he's swimming in the water, and then fish trying to talk to him. But like, why are animals in the water hiding behind rocks? And it creates this it's almost like this Alice in Wonderland weird alternate reality where you know, and the spokesman for this reality is this one fish just trying to talk to him, but otherwise they're unseen entities, you know, the animals that he can't see, and they're hiding, and it just seems super random. But yeah, so apparently this was something that he refers to a diving excursion that he went on in the Caribbean. And it reminds me, by the way, this is so with a lot of lyrics, like with alternative rock stuff, like I have no idea. Like, I'm super into like Bush also and Nirvana. I have idea what most of their stuff is talking about, and they're just like random words, and I like them because they're in the song. But that weird bit in "Where Is My Mind" where he talks about swimming and there's hidden animals and a fish is trying to talk to him reminds
the koi.
You know what? I wonder too. Like, is that because there's like he does like is that a yammer or is that an actual word he says, that koi koi thing?
I think it's just like when you put buffalo in a bunch, you know, buffalo can mean so many different things. It's a koi koi, like it's some sort of a shy koi fish that is trying to talk to him, but can't. It's an odd lyric. I get the sense he's trying to talk to the animals like a Dr. Doolittle character all of a sudden, and you know, this kind of shy fish is the only one who's sort of approaching him at all, where he's in the water.
Well, when you look up the lyrics, it does say that like it will say like koi koi, and like that's what the fish is trying to say. But I also don't know, like, there are times that Black Francis will sing and he'll do some kind of like inarticulate yammering thing. Mm. So I was wondering, is that really what's going on there? Or is he really trying to say the words koi koi, like shy, or like a koi goldfish? Who knows? But what it reminded me of, this idea of this one fish trying to talk to him. So I've done some diving before, and I live in Southern California. And when you scuba dive out here, it's not like idyllic Caribbean waters, but it has its own charm. Like, I love the waters in Southern California. And we have out here, it's actually our state fish. It's something called the Garibaldi. And a Garibaldi, you see them all over the place when you dive. They're just bright orange fish. I have no idea why they're our state fish, but they're all over down here. And what's unique about a Garibaldi is they are they're kind of territorial, and they can get aggressive, which with a little fish like that.
How big are they?
It's not like it's like the size of your hand, basically. They're not big fish. So aggressiveness with a Garibaldi is when you're diving, and if you get like too close to it, rather than just dart away, which is what most fish will do, a Garibaldi will like swim right up at you and then swim away. Like, it's not going to ram you, but it's like trying to like back you down almost. And it's really precious, like, to watch this little orange fish basically puffing out its chest as much as it can by rushing at you. It's not going to ram into you, so it turns away at the last minute, and then it rushes at you, and it looks really cute, but it makes me think of that lyric. You know, this fish is trying to tell me something. It's trying to talk to me, and it's being super insistent about it. So I love that little lyric, and it just makes me think of our Garibaldis out here in Southern California.
I like that image. I know when I think of the animals, I think of...
Yeah, yeah.
There's this children's book called My Father's Dragon, and it's got this very bright color. It's kind of got these 50s, 60s children's book style to it. So it looks very simple, and it's very bright, and everything's very rounded. And I almost imagine those are the animals, like these adorable little things, and they're hiding. They're so shy of the singer as he's swimming around, and they're just these like little adorable things.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, like you have a visual for what they are. Yeah, that's awesome.
But this is the good. I mean, I think any song that even. I mean, I think this song works very well because, like you said, they're words. Could they just be words? Maybe they're. Oh, I had these thoughts. So I wrote down a bunch of words. But when you can come up with your own image, when you can come up with the place you heard it, when you're adding, you know, yourself to the song, I think that's. I mean, that's really the formula for a song that you're gonna remember. You're gonna want to talk about because it has become a part of you, and exactly what it means almost ceases to matter. You know. Black Francis could jump into the Skype call right now and be like, actually, it's about the economy. And we'd be like, nobody cares, Black Francis.
Right, exactly. Your authorial intent is not important to me. I've done my own business with this. Right. But he does, though, to his credit, and I don't think you can say this about a lot of alternative rock. Like, when I think of like Bush or Nirvana or other things that have what seem to be nonsense lyrics, at least Where Is My Mind? It begins with this it's like setting the stage with this kind of world building where you are upside down and your head is empty, so it's collapsed in on itself. But like this imagery of things being topsy-turvy and insubstantial. So that's kind of the tone that it sets is, you know, you're spinning on your head and your head is collapsed because there's nothing in there. So there's like almost a physical absence of your brain almost is, seems to be what's going on here. And that represents like, I guess, being crazy or being in this alternate reality. But yeah, so all taken together, I get a very distinct narrative from Where Is My Mind. But to be fair, actually, a lot of Pixies does do that. Like, you know, even you listen to like Bone Machine, which has that weird thing about you tried to molest me in the parking lot. Like,
yeah. You like, bought me a soda.
Yeah,
you tried to molest.
Right, yeah. And it's like, who is Peachy Peach? Like, there's stuff going on that you have this... The sense that, you know, the songs that the Pixies do, a lot of them do create little stories or little worlds, and they fit together in ways. And I don't know, maybe other music does that that sounds like nonsense at first when you think about it. But a lot of Pixies songs do tell stories, and Where Is My Mind, I think, is one of the clearest, most accessible stories that the Pixies tells. Now, I don't know. So, Rob, you probably know more technical stuff about music. So that siren sound you said, that's probably like lead guitar. Would you call that? Because to me, like, I think of Nirvana. I think of a lot of rock that has like a distorted guitar, where it's kind of, I don't even know how to characterize this, but it's kind of like a dissipated sound over the longer sustain or something. But in comparison, I think about the guitar in Where Is My Mind having this higher pitched, sort of taut, distinct, crisper sound. Like, is that a lack of distortion, or?
It certainly could be. I mean, there's a lot of processing. Like, probably not as much as an 88, but there's just a lot of things you can do with the sound of the instrument. And it does have a real crispness to the guitar itself. So whether or not that is just they played it straight, or they just put no filters whatsoever, they didn't really amplify it, that certainly could produce, as far as I know,
right,
could sort of produce that sound.
Because it seems to me like I can almost visualize, and I don't know much about guitar, but I can almost visualize someone just plucking that string back and forth, like da na na na.
Yeah, I think that's the sense I get, is it's just sort of someone just the two strings back and forth, because that's really it, other than I think the riff in the middle is just a lot of that one repeated pattern in the background, sort of moving the song along at that kind of, not exactly lugubrious, but definitely a slower pace as you're moving through.
Wow, that is not a word I thought I would hear today, Rob. Very nicely done.
Well, I do have to pay for my my Ivy League education somehow. I didn't do it in getting a good job or anything like that. But
you mentioned, so it being like that being a core value of the song. I don't know what word you would use, but that's like a big part of the song structure. To me, there's actually another part of it as well. It's a counterpoint to the urgency of that siren sound with the guitar, and that is, and again, I'm assuming it's Kim Deal, I don't know, that is that ooh, that in the background, that actually opens a song with someone going ooh, and then Black Francis goes stop, and then the song starts, and she doesn't stop, because later, during each of the verses, she's doing that in the background as well, and in fact, long after the song has ended, she is still doing that ethereal, angelic, like that sound. So the soothing, angelic nature of that, contrasted with the siren urgency of the guitar, is to me this great aural, like sweet and sour kind of thing going on. One of them is really poking at you and pricking you, and like that guitar is like claws almost. And then the other one is soothing you, like you would pet a fuzzy cat or something. So those two contrasts, and they're present throughout the song, and one of them begins. I mean, one of them prevails, and that's that soothing ethereal sound. You know, one of them prevails, and I just love the tension between the two of them throughout the song.
Yeah. Oh, I like your description of that, Tom. That's excellent. In terms of the singing, the ooh sound. For some reason, I always thought, even though he does say, you know, stop right there on the track, I always thought it was Black Francis doing that in like a really, really high strained falsetto.
Oh.
Rather than Kim. I do not know that at all. It certainly could just be Kim,
right.
But there was sort of a quality to the vocal, ooh, that just doesn't quite, like, it's not quite in whoever's singing, it's not quite in their range. Like, they're really reaching, which I know when I hear that sound, it's one of those, I'm getting chills from that sound, because it's just it's higher than you feel like it should be. It feels like it's gonna crack at any minute, but that they keep hitting the sound. I mean, maybe they just recorded it once and then they just looped it over and over again rather than singing it each time.
Well,
I
can tell you, and I'd love to mention this as well. I've actually seen the Pixies, and when I saw them, it was with Kim Deal. Kim Deal was actually singing, like she was at the microphone.
Oh, she was singing it.
Yeah, I'm almost positive that's how I remember. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool. When did you see them? When they got back together in the early 2000s?
Yeah.
Or?
So I don't go to a lot of live music, and I think, like, I had at one point like a bucket list, like these are the people I would like to see before I die. I mean, or so what I subconsciously did, there's a guy named Elliot Smith who was on that list, and I saw Elliot Smith like real shortly before he died, and it was awful, Rob. Like he couldn't talk. He couldn't finish playing the songs. So, I mean, he was just so strung out. I mean,
That's the word about him. I know my wife our first date, she told me about Elliott Smith way back when, and she said, like, the way he would do vocals is he'd have to record it and then dub on himself and then dub on himself like 3-4 times to get his volume to a place he can actually hear him.
You mean like for the actual recordings?
Yeah, okay, like on the CD. Right. But it sounds like he also was not really with it at the performance.
Well, I think at times, I mean, it was heroin. I mean, he was a notorious heroin addict, and supposedly he was clean when he was killed or committed suicide. Depends on who you ask. So supposedly he was clean, but certainly when I saw him, he was not clean. Like, this was not a guy who, this was clearly a guy who was on heroin. And he couldn't, he couldn't really talk, and a guy had to come out with a little, like, it was just like a couple of drums. It wasn't a drum kit, to sort of keep rhythm and to sort of keep him going. I mean, the guy was like there almost to keep him awake, and it was just, I mean, it was devastating to see that. But I got to see Elliott Smith before he died. So also on the bucket list was like the Pixies, but they weren't together. And I would love to see, like the Doors and Led Zeppelin, but they've been long since gone. So I always assumed the Pixies were going to be in that category. And then they got back together, and I had a friend of mine who was going to Coachella. I don't know what year this would have been, but believe it or not, and I kind of feel, I feel a little indignant about this. The Pixies were opening for Radiohead. Now I like Radiohead, and I'm super into Radiohead as well. But I was like, wait a minute, no, it should almost be the other way around. I kind of feel. So I went to Coachella, and here's also a minor detail. I'll just name drop. If you're into video games, a friend of mine does a lot of voice acting. He was the Prince of Persia. He's in the latest Persona game. If you play that awful, if your kids have actually ever played it, Rob, Disney Infinity, you have heard my friend nagging at you with things like, okay, now press the X button. Now put your figure on the stand. Now, walk over here. He's like the narrator of Disney Infinity. He's Ben 10 on this cartoon series. But so a friend of mine named Yuri Lowenthal is a big time like voice actor. And he said like back then he was going to go to Coachella, and I think his girlfriend like couldn't make it. So he's like, hey, do you want to come with me? Do you want to buy her a ticket? And I was like, yeah, totally. Because the Pixies were playing and Radiohead. I'm into both of them. So we go out there, and I don't know, like Coachella it's not quite the desert, but it is kind of the desert. Like you're out in the middle of the desert. There's all these different stages you can go to. And we got there like super early in the afternoon. The Pixies and Radiohead weren't playing till it was late, but it was like one of the stages. And if you went over there, you could even see, oh, it's totally filling up. Like hours and hours before the Pixies are supposed to be on. And they would have all these other bands that I'm sure some people have heard of them, but they would have all these other bands playing, and I didn't know who they were. But we were going around thinking, okay, let's go see, like Beck was in one of the tents. So we're like, yeah, let's go see Beck. Way too full. There was no way we were going to get up anywhere. Like, if we wanted to stand way back. So we were like, well, we don't want this to happen with the Pixies and Radiohead. Let's go ahead and get in position.
Yeah.
So the middle of the day in this hot desert, we sort of pushed our way up while some dippy local metal band or something was playing. And we just waited. And we waited through, like, literally 4 or 5 of these bands. And the bands play, and then it takes a while for the other one to come and do their set. And we just had a great position, like, not up against the stage, but just far enough back that, I could have easily chucked something underhand and it would have hit Black Francis. Like, we were that close, totally.
Wow.
And we just waited through all of these horrible, horrible bands. And there's this great sense of, because everyone there around you, and you're totally pressed shoulder to shoulder. I mean, you couldn't, if your legs were to let go underneath you, you would be held up because you're so scrunched in with everyone.
Oh, that sounds less fun.
Well, that's the thing is, that's what like concerts, I guess, used to be like. I guess nowadays, like, I don't know if you have seating, but I remember going to Coliseum concerts as a kid, and that's what it was like. You get up there in this huge crush of humanity, and you press together. It's like with everyone else who's a big fan of the band. So we were with all these people who were there for the Pixies and Radiohead, and everybody, there's this great communal spirit. I mean, in that we're all sweating, by the way, because it's super hot, and because we're pressed so tightly together, like, your sweat is mingling with everyone else's sweat. And there's like no modesty, or nobody's trying to like look good at this point. It's totally like, we're just here, like, sweating, waiting for the Pixies. And there's this communal spirit where people are sharing what water they have. And too, by the way, if you go to get water, if you go to the bathroom or something, you're not going to get your place back. There's no way you're going to get up to where you were before. And I remember after the fact thinking, wait a minute. I was there for literally hours. I was drinking water. I never had to go to the bathroom. That's because I think you were sweating out all of the liquids that you take in.
That's not how your body is supposed to work.
I can't imagine it was healthy, but yeah. So eventually the Pixies come on. They hadn't been – I mean, I don't know if this is – they might have played a few other dates, but this was literally like right when they were reuniting. And so I remember thinking, well, you know, because you see these bands that are broken up for 10, 20 years, whatever, and they get back together and it just sounds terrible. So I was kind of bracing myself for that. But as we now know, and this was such a revelation at that point, they were just so on point. It was like they'd never broken up. I mean, just song after song, and they were just so tight, and they just felt like they'd been rehearsing, and it just clicked so amazingly.
Even with because I know Kim and – that's what they broke – that's one of the reasons they broke up was Kim and Black Francis wanting to – you know, who's controlling
right,
the band.
Right.
And who, so I'm surprised because you always hear about those bands that broke up because of who's in control. And then she went on to do the Breeders,
yeah.
I think. And you always think, well, if they finally get back together, it's got to be a cash grab. I can't imagine they're really happy to be here. They're sort of just, they're like, what are we playing? Our hits? Okay, let's move through this.
Right.
I never want to see these people again. But that's amazing that they actually, you know, brought that sound and seemed that energetic.
I mean, you did. I don't know. I don't even think I'm sure at that point I probably didn't know anything about the tension between Black Francis and Kim Deal. And now, you know, she's no longer with them and she's been replaced and they've even replaced her replacement. And so it's become a big sticky, messy thing. At the time, I didn't know. And maybe because I didn't know, I just didn't see it. But yeah, there was no inkling of any sort of tension or like one person in the band doing his or her own thing and someone doing something else. I mean, they just seemed so like interactive and they just seem so in tune with each other. And, you know, sometimes you'll go to hear someone play live music and it's kind of disappointing because it doesn't sound anything like the recorded music. And this sounded, and this was good for me. I mean, this sounded just like the recorded music. Like, you know, obviously it was live, but it really felt like they were playing it as if they had just come off of recording it. I mean, it just clicked so well. And it just felt so polished in a good way. I mean, polished Pixies still has a kind of a raw quality to it.
Yeah.
But it just felt so just together. They just really felt like a cohesive band who was coming together to do these great songs. Yeah. And they closed with Where Is My Mind, by the way.
Oh, that's like they closed. Was their encore or their double encore?
Was it a double? Yeah, I mean, they definitely like came out, and I think that was like the last song. And it was as it was getting dark, and it was just like this awesome, magical moment. Was like hearing that, and probably part of it might have been delirium of just like being out in the sun so long and being dehydrated.
You'd sweated out all your pee, so I mean,
right.
you're.
but yeah, so and then you know Radiohead came out, and it was fine, but it was like It couldn't hold a candle to like what I had just seen.
Wow. Yeah, and at the time, I mean, they're still around. I think they put out an album, or they put out something, right?
They've done three EPs, Rob. I mean,
three EPs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have to confess, I don't know any of them.
I only found out they had three EPs the other day when I was doing kind of like a quick Wikipedia search. Like, what have they been up to recently? And, ooh, yeah. Totally not on my radar.
I did try to just listen just because I was like, well, I wonder if there's anything worth mentioning. And when I talked to Rob, I just tried to listen to one of the songs and I just wasn't doing anything for me. And so I sort of gave up. And I kind of feel like I'm kind of okay with letting go of new stuff the Pixies does. And if at some point hear something, that's great. But I'm not like, you know, I loved what the Pixies were doing. I love that music. I certainly love Where's My Mind. But I don't feel the need. Maybe this is just like being older or something. I don't feel the need to like follow them and know everything they do and then pick up all their latest albums. I'm kind of happy with those albums that I have, which is kind of weird. I mean, I guess if you really like a musician or an artist, you want to know everything that they've done. But that's maybe part of how I'm not like a super hardcore music guy is if you get older, you know what you like that, and you're kind of happy with it. You're not like looking for stuff. I don't know.
You know, I know what you mean. I mean, I remember when I was, I mean, I'm, you know, I collect so many things because I'm, you know, that's my generation. I grew up in the 80s and everything was about owning all the stuff. And with music, I used to be, well, I have this album. I therefore need every other album by this band. And yeah, the same as you. As I got older, I realized there are some bands I want to hear what their new album is, but so much of music is my personal relationship to it. And I'm not going to have the same relationship with a band, you know, now in my 30s than I did in my 20s, right, than I did when I was a teenager. And sometimes it works out. You know, there are some bands that I just kind of keep enjoying the albums they put out. And then there are other bands that I just kind of get that one album and I'm like, eh, I don't think I care about this so much. I'm going to go back and listen to the old stuff. I mean, even the Pixies, I could listen to Surfer Rosa. I could listen to Doolittle 1,000 times over. I think I only listened to Bossa Nova once, and it just, it wasn't doing the same things that those first two albums mm-hmm. were doing for me. And I was like, oh, that's okay. That's fine. Maybe I'll come back to this someday. But I just didn't have the same appeal.
And also, when you think, I mean, we have limited, like, you can't see every single movie. You see a couple of movies a week or whatever, and those are the movies you're going to see. It's kind of the same for me with music, because I only have so much bandwidth to enjoy music, and I've got stuff that I'm also discovering now that I mm-hmm. like, and I don't need to discover the Pixies anymore. And that sounds a little mean and callous, but yeah, I've got other things I'm digging that are new, I guess new, that I really like right now. So
sure. Oh, well, what else are you listening to these days?
The one that I really like is I'm not even sure how to say her first name, Elle or Ellie King. She's Rob Schneider's daughter, which is a weird detail about her. But it's like super awesome. Like, if you were to listen to her, you would think like she was this old soulful black woman. But it's super awesome, like sort of blues. There's a song called X's and O's from it that sounds totally like Tennessee Ernie Williams, is that his name? Yeah, that you load 10 tons, what do you get? Like it.
Oh, yeah.
Her song called X's and O's is almost a direct, like, musical clone of that, but it's about, like, her ex-boyfriends. So that's the thing that I'm constantly, like, replaying over and over on Spotify. The Star Wars soundtrack, I mean, that's kind of dorky, but...
You're a Star Wars fan, right?
Yeah,
because I can never tell from your shows, because it seems sometimes like you are, and you're just joking about it, but maybe, I'm always like, oh, maybe he doesn't really like Star Wars. Maybe it's not his thing, I don't know.
I love Star Wars, and I hate the prequels, and that I was totally disillusioned with all those, but I love the old Star Wars movies, and I loved the new Star Wars movie, and I think John mm-hmm. Williams' soundtrack just does some... There's a lot of old familiar stuff, but there's a lot of really cool new stuff that I was totally surprised that John Williams was able to do. Like, you know, you think of him as one of those composers who's constantly just reiterating his same old thing. But there's some really nice stuff in the Star Wars soundtrack that I listen to. And there's another, and God, it's so movie informed. There's a guy named Tom Holkenberg who works under the name Junkie XL, and he's done soundtracks for 300 Rise of an Empire, for Fury Road just this last year. I love listening to his stuff when I'm just not like, it's not like the L. King stuff. Like, I'm kind of paying attention when I listen to a song with vocals in a different
sure.
way than just instrumental music. So, and yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, X's and O's I heard on the radio. So, but otherwise, I guess everything I get is mostly from movies. Even, Rob, this is weird, Elliot Smith, had no idea who he was until I saw a movie called Royal Tenenbaums, where
there's
a song called Needle in the Hay at a very pivotal moment. And I remember hearing that and thinking, oh, who is this guy? I got to look this up. I didn't know, what's that thing about the genius janitor at MIT? Shoot.
Goodwill Hunting.
I've never seen that.
It's okay.
Well, it's got, you know, Elliot Smith was nominated for an Oscar for the song in that.
All I remember was Affleck Damon, but I mean, that's all they talked about because they're from around here, so that's all anyone cared about. It's like, oh, you know, local Southie boys made good, so no one mentioned anything else about that movie.
Right, that's before they were real celebrities, wasn't it? Kind of.
Oh yeah, yeah. They were just the new stuff, new kids on the block.
But that, too, like, if I had seen that movie, maybe I would have been into Elliot Smith earlier. Who knows? But you know, I got it from that scene in Royal Tenenbaums. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
I guess that is more and more, I think, how people are discovering music. Like, I don't know if you have a friend who's sort of your music friend. Oh, you got to listen to this. You know, they bring you the CDs or they bring you the MP3s. But I don't listen to, you know, terrestrial radio anymore. I don't even do a lot of Pandora or Spotify.
Uh-huh.
I'm mostly just, if I hear about something from listening to something else, you know, it's an ad or it's
right.
a, uh, It's certainly a movie. Like I know you guys did a podcast on The Hunger Games way back when, and I remember watching the movie. It was whatever, and then the credits came on, and they had a song by a Taylor Swift song, and they had a song by Arcade Fire. I knew Arcade Fire, but I didn't really know Taylor Swift at the time, and she was singing with a band called The Civil Wars.
Yeah, sure.
And it was amazing, and I was like, where's this band been my whole life? And I immediately went, and I downloaded the songs, and I listened to them over and over again, and, you know, you looked at a couple other of their songs. But no one was going to tell me about that band. I mean, I even had people, when I told them about the song, I was like, oh, yeah, The Civil Wars, they're really good. But they were never going to tell me that unless I already kind of brought it and that experience,
right.
You know, with me.
I was hoping that story was going to end with you explaining how you're a huge Taylor Swift fan.
No, I should. I feel like I could be. I mean, certainly like that We Are Never Getting Back Together song. My kids love singing that. So that gets a lot of play in the car. She's super popular, and I just feel so unhip. Like, I didn't buy her big album that everybody else in the world.
Well, Rob, you're not a tween girl. You're not the demographic for that.
I don't think she's a tween, though. I don't think it's a tween hit. I think it has legitimate, like, I have heard grown men talking about how much they love that last album. I think 1989, I think it was. Like, they just love listening to it, and I've listened to it over and over. The way that I remember when I was younger, people talking about, like, Santana. Remember when Santana kind of came back? It's all I ever play in my car, and you're just like, that's so sad. And now it's that, but it's Taylor Swift. It's like, oh, that's kind of, maybe it's better musically, I don't know, but it's sort of, like, that's not the music for you, old man. Go to bed. It's time for, you know, young kids to like that stuff.
All right, you know what, Rob? I'm going to now adopt you as one of my music friends, and I am going to put a Taylor Swift album in my Spotify rotation and see if that clicks for me. So,
okay, give it a shot. Yeah, you never know. Give it a shot. Yeah. Let me know how that goes. So, Tom, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, back to Coachella. Did they play Debaser?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't remember specifically, but I can't imagine they didn't. I mean, the Debaser, so something happened, too. I don't know. This must have been in the last 10 years or so, because, and I imagine it was in the wake of Where's My Mind being at the end of Fight Club. But I hear Pixies in a lot of, like, movies, like small indie movies, and I think they're very liberal with licensing their songs. So Debaser is one I hear in a lot of movies. So I was going to say, I'm sure they played Debaser. I don't remember specifically. Why do you ask? Is that one you like?
Oh, I love Debaser. We'd have because my brother became like the music guy for a while, but he sort of co-opted a lot of what I had started liking. So he co-opted the Pixies. So anytime we'd get together as family, or, you know, we'd have a little summer party, he would just, whatever speakers he had, this is before Bluetooth was even around, he would just play Debaser as loud as possible. And it never got old. Like, I think some of the ladies didn't like it as much because, you know, they're talking about the slice and eyeballs
right,
and whatnot.
Right, right.
But, just screaming the lyrics out and just the thrumming guitar. I can't imagine. Like, here's a band that, you're never going to see this band. Oh, wait, maybe you are. And they're just playing, like, these lightly raucous, the kind of the weird alternative songs, just the raucous songs, the rocking out songs. I'm very envious.
Because, yeah, Debaser is stuff like, and there's one called, I think it might be called Caribou. No, not Caribou. But there's some that are just like very Black Flag screamy songs. Debaser isn't quite that bad. But yeah, there's some songs that are great if you're in that, like, punk, fuck the world kind of attitude.
Why I listened to Limp Bizkit for a while.
Oh,
you know,
my God,
when.
Well, I wouldn't admit that on the air.
Well, they're not getting their own episode.
Do you ever hear, so another thing that I think they're liberal with licensing out some of their songs, because I've heard, you know, Debaser, and I don't even remember, there was some indie movie which I hated, and Debaser opened it. And so I kind of now, it's the inverse of of Where's My Mind in Fight Club. It kind of made me like Debaser less. because the movie was so proud that it got Debaser, and it was the opening scene where you're introduced to the protagonist, and he was just super annoying, and I was like, I'm not into what this movie's trying to do, and you're ruining this Pixies song for me.
what movie was it?
Oh, I wish I could remember. I don't remember, Rob. One of the cool things, though, about Wikipedia, for instance, if you go on Wikipedia and you look up Debaser, they're really good about, like, showing, you know, culture. I think it's like cultural uses or whatever. They'll tell you like what TV shows, what commercials, what movies it's used in. So I'm sure it's out there, but it was some indie movie. Yeah, I couldn't tell you, but it kind of messed up the baser for me.
Oh, that's a crime. That song shouldn't be ruined for anyone. It's amazing.
I also, though, in the same way, like I mentioned before, the Pixies songs have this sense of a story and a narrative. And DeBaser does make me think of, is it Luis Buñuel? Who did the movie of the slicing eyeball?
I think it was a Salvador Dali.
Dali, oh,
where did
it? Yeah. Well, yeah. But because I've certainly seen that before. I'm like, ew, because I don't want, that movie, that footage is like gross and weird, and I'm not a Dali fan. And so it's Black Francis talking about something that doesn't really appeal to me. Because another favorite of mine is Gouge Away. And do you have a sense personally, like, what the narrative is in Gouge Away? I don't know how clear it is, generally.
I've never understood the lyrics. I get the gouge away, stay all day. And then I have no idea what he says after that. It's just, and I never thought to look up the lyrics. So you're going to have to tell me, Tom. I do not know.
Gouge Away is very clearly about the Samson and Delilah story in the Old Testament. And Samson having his haircut being captured by the Philistines and having his eyes gouged out. And then he's, you know, they, for sport, they pin him to a column in their temple, and they're all laughing at him or whatever. And he just gets so mad and has this Herculean feat of strength. He rips the column out and collapses the temple and kills himself and everyone in it. So Gouge Away is, and I don't know how Black Francis knows about this. He doesn't strike me as like a devout Jew or anything. it's Black Francis talking about the Samson, you know, the Samson's suicide and murder in the context of some kind of weird love story.
Whoa.
And it's just,
I got to listen to that again now, because yeah, I never, ever would have been, not a million years, have guessed that.
Yeah, it's even stuff about being chained to the columns and pushing, it's super biblical, and I, you know, my studies were in, like, Old Testament studies for a while, so I was like, wow, that's cool, My friends, not only does he go diving like me, he knows about Old Testament stuff.
Well, you know, he was a product of Massachusetts' fine state university system. So
does that explain a lot? I don't really have a sense for it. Yeah. So wait, are you just doing an Ivy nose, turn up your Ivy League turn up nose thing?
No. There, you know, that's probably where I will be able to afford to send my kids to school. No, they came from, they met, at least, I think Joey Santiago and Black Francis met at, when they were at UMass Amherst, which is a good school. It is a good school. I'm not trying to be snobby.
When I was in school out there, I had a girlfriend that was at Amherst who would drive out and see her. Yeah, so.
Oh, that's right. You did, where did you, I forget where, but I know I saw somewhere you did theology at, you did Harvard?
Harvard, yes, which is always, like, makes people think, that when you say that, people have certain expectations about you that I'm not sure that I can live up to. But yes, I was at the Divinity School there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you kind of know the area a bit. I like going out there. My wife and I go to a conference out there, and it's always fun to visit. And next time I'll try to find where, I wonder where Black Francis's dorm was, and ask the tour guides. And
well, then wait, so I told where I went to Ivy League school. Where did you go?
Oh, God, I went to Brown.
Okay, sure. Yeah, you're highfalutin as well. Yeah, okay, I'll take that.
I almost went to Harvard. I almost did, but then I decided it wasn't for me, and I took a year off instead and worked in retail.
I think Brown is considered the Harvard of Rhode Island, if I'm not. Wait, is Brown in Providence? Did I just make that up?
Yes, no, it is in Providence.
Yeah, the Harvard of Rhode Island, so sure.
It is tough, because usually people ask me where I go to school, and I feel like I should be able to say, I went to Brown, that's where I went, I'm proud of myself, and that I'm a smart, and I worked hard. But I always say it with this sort of like, I went to school in Providence.
Yeah, I do the same thing, like I was out east.
Somewhere, could have been anywhere.
So one thing I wanted to mention before we go is sometimes you hear covers of songs that you know.
Oh, yes.
Boy, Where Is My Mind has been covered up one side and down the other. And was it even in, I might be mistaken about this, it might have been in the last Metal Gear game, but don't hold me to that. Where I specifically remember hearing an instrumental of it. And this to me was so derivative, and I don't know if this made me hate this show or like it more, but there was a show on USA Network called Mr. Robot.
I heard that was pretty good.
I actually ended up really liking it, and especially the way the season ended. There was clearly indebted to Fight Club in very specific ways. It makes no bones about it. And during a revelation scene, which is very similar to the revelation scene at the end of Fight Club, there's an instrumental version of "Where Is My Mind" like playing on piano. And I was kind of like, oh my god, that's too on the nose, guys. I mean, everybody knows you're riffing on Fight Club. You also have to take the music from it to like drive the point home.
Yeah, it's tough. I know there was a car commercial that used "Where Is My Mind."
My god, I don't want to know that, Rob. That's terrible.
If you really want to, you know, if you want to stare into the void for a little bit, I think it was "Lightning in a Bottle." Was the name of the concept of that commercial. I don't remember what car it was, but they had. They had someone doing, it was like a like light guitar, but it was almost a spoken word version of "Where's My..." Oh yeah, it sort of fit. Like, when I didn't know what it was, I was like, I kind of like this song. What's this song? And then when I realized what it was, it just felt very bastardized. I was very upset. I did not buy that car.
you showed them, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So
I'll teach them.
Another cover I heard of "Where's My Mind," and I don't know who did this, and I can't disapprove of this because it's so audacious. There is a movie about a mall security guard. And I know that when most people hear that, they think, oh, Paul Blart mall security cop or whatever. Not that thing. Not the Kevin James thing. This was one I think was directed by a guy named Jody Hill, who works on a show called Eastbound and Down. He works with David Gordon Green, and they do these very biting comedies. So this is a movie called Observe and Report. And it's with Seth Rogen playing a mall cop.
Michael Pena's in that one.
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't know who else is it. Yeah. No, that sounds about right. And it's actually good. Like, I mean, I guess compared to Paul Blart, it's genius, but I actually kind of like that movie. It's like early Seth Rogen before he was so ubiquitous, and you're like, wow, this guy's really talented. He's supernaturalistic. He's fun to watch. He's humorous. So at one point in Observe and Report, and I think that's the name of it, his sort of nemesis, like the overarching crime that he's dealing with in this mall, is a streaker. So at the climactic scene where there's some kind of redemption or something going on and he captures the streaker, there's a scene, this is a very R-rated comedy, there's a scene of the streaker, who's this like weird-looking middle-aged man, ripping off his overcoat and running naked through the mall in slow motion, his penis like flapping. I mean, there's no, they're not doing anything like trying to hide it by putting bushes in front of where he's running. This is just a slow-mo shot of an old naked dude running, and there's a cover of "Where Is My Mind" playing. And like I said, I don't know if I hate that. I mean, it's just so audacious that it's like, yeah, let's do a Pixies cover while everybody's watching this guy's penis flap in slow motion. Well, you know what though, Rob? Do you remember the last image in Fight Club?
Not just the buildings all falling. Oh god, it was. Was it one of the Project Mayhem, like fallouts or something they were doing, right?
They refer earlier to Tyler Durden splicing in traumatic images.
Yes.
So the last shot in Fight Club is a big old penis. Because that's one of the things Tyler Durden would do, is he would put in animated child's movies just one frame of a penis. And that was kind of riffing, too, on the idea that the narrator had seen Tyler Durden. You know, Brad Pitt's character appears at other times in the movie just as one frame. He just pops in and out. And that's kind of getting into the insomnia and the paranoia that the narrator's suffering. And then we discover that's one thing Tyler Durden does, is he will insert frames into movies to subliminally harass people. So the last shot in Fight Club is a frame of a big old hairy gross penis. So I'm thinking of that. Maybe that's what Jody Hill was getting at with Observe and Report, with playing "Where Is My Mind" with a slow motion scene of something you rarely see in movies, namely a dude's penis. So I don't know. Maybe that was intentional. It just now occurred to me. So,
or maybe we're now a generation of people who have subconsciously associated "Where Is My Mind" with a penis, and
right.
it's there forever now.
Right? Yeah.
It's indelible.
Exactly.
Oh man. Well, Tom, I so much appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about songs and my few listeners. But you know, hey, maybe we'll have more because I got a celebrity now.
Oh,
very excited about.
I'm so glad to have gotten on before someone stole Where Is My Mind. I mean, that just seems like, I mean, you've got a good catalog going. I remember going back through and thinking, oh, that song, yeah. It was just a matter of time before someone stole this one, so I'm glad I got to it first.
No one else can ever do it now. It's locked. It's going to be in the archive.
I called dibs. Dibs on Where Is My Mind. Yeah.
Now, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about that song and its meaning. One of the things I like to ask everybody is, you know, it's definitely your song, but elevator pitch, why should it be the collective our song? Like, if you had to tell someone who never heard it why it's an important song or why it's a special song, what would you say to them?
Oh, I love that, Rob. Wow. That's quite the question to be ambushed with. Very good.
My wife refuses to answer. She says, I don't care every time I ask her, so... You could certainly punt if need be. But.
No, I wouldn't want to punt. No, and you tell your – no, don't put up with that from your wife, Rob. No, you – like, ask tough questions and make people think of what they would say and answer. No, I like that. How would I pitch it? I guess I would say, as before, it's a unique tension between urgency and soothing, between self-awareness and madness. It's a great study in contrasts, and it's a great – internal tension with the narrative of this guy who's gone crazy and is very aware of it and he's wondering what happened. It's the most psychologically rich Pixies song that they did. And it stands out as unique in terms of tone and message and narrative from all of their other songs. So that's where I would go with that.
There you go. That's why I've read your writing for so long, Tom, because you don't miss a beat. You don't miss a beat with your responses. It's excellent.
Thank you very much.
Well, Tom, again, like I said, this is I might go into weird mode here, but I did make a list when I started this podcast of everyone in my family to see if I could do an entire year. Was it worth spending the $80 on the microphone?
Uh-huh.
If I made everyone in my family, could I do 50 episodes? You know, if I did a year, no one's going to yell at me for wasting the money. And then I made a little list on the side, and it was like, oh, people I listen to on the internet or people I know on the internet, maybe someday they'll do my show. And I did have your name on that list. So thank you very much for making my podcast dream come true with that. So,
well, you're very welcome, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Now, do you have anything you want to plug or promote?
Sure.
I don't have a huge audience, but it's always good to
I would
get that stuff out.
You know what? Whether it's huge or not, I love anybody who listens to this idea of a podcast, I want to talk to. So I like this. Anybody listening, I would invite you to come to quarter3.com, check out the stuff I write, and you can follow me on Twitter at QT3. That's the letter Q, the letter T. And the number 3.
And you guys are doing when is your movie podcast, The Pledge Drive, is over next week or still going?
Right, we have a movie podcast every Sunday night. And in 3 weeks, people are donating. They're going to pick a movie that we have to watch. You know, this is whatever it is. They can prank us. It can be something they love. We have to watch and do an entire podcast, which is basically like talking for an hour about this movie. And, yeah, so if you listen to the movie podcast, we'll explain at the very front how you can participate in this. Yeah, and okay. That'll be in 3 weeks.
Now, I want to promote the fund drive as well. I would like everybody who's listening to at least, you know, donate whatever you can, but make sure you vote for The Goonies. Yes. That is the movie I voted for.
I don't know if I should. Well, you know what? I'll go ahead and say this. Goonies is currently at the top of the list.
Oh, no way.
Goonies
really?
Has, oh, and I don't even want to say, I won't say how much until it's over, until it's in, and we'll totally just tell how many votes everything got, but as we go along, I just want to point out, like, what movies are winning. Goonies, far and ahead, is in the lead. It's a little bit,
oh my God.
It's a little bit silly, Rob. I mean, if you were to play odds, if you were to play the odds, The Goonies is looking like a pretty front runner at this point, yeah.
Oh, everyone wants to back a winner, and that is what The Goonies really, really is.
I guess you could say that The Goonies is the Donald Trump of this GOP convention.
Well, if The Goonies does win, Tom, I think I will do a Cyndi Lauper. I don't know if you know, she does a lot of songs featured in The Goonies.
Man,
you get to listen to like all of them. It's really good if it wins. But if Goonies wins, I think I might do a Cyndi Lauper cast just as a parallel to what you guys have to
I wouldn't, I mean, I would love someone else. Time After Time, I think, is an awesome song.
Oh, that gives me every time.
I can't, I mean, it's, yeah. And I'm not being the least bit facetious. Like, are you with me on that?
No, Time After Time is so good. It's just you, like the whisper kind of vocals at the end. I just want to sing it like all the time. Anytime it pops in my head, I'm not embarrassed. I'll sing it loud. I'll sing it quietly.
Did you see? And I'm sorry to drag this out, but again, movie related.
No, Tom, you could drag it as long as you want. I already fell asleep in a meeting yesterday, so no one expects anything from me at work.
Well, just closing with another minor movie reference. Have you seen the Charlie Kaufman animated thing, Anomalisa?
No, I haven't. I've heard some people seem to have loved it. Some people seem to have hated it. So I'm worried that it won't.
It's pretty divisive. Yeah, like it is definitely a love it or hate it thing. And I hate it. I wasn't into it. But there's a great moment where Jennifer Jason Leigh does an a cappella rendition of Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And it's beautiful. It's an amazing. Her voice is awesome. And it's an amazing cover of it. And it's my favorite part of the movie, like when she busts out with that. So, okay.
So maybe wait till it comes out on video and just see that scene.
It'll be on YouTube or something. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, you know, actually, to be fair, though, part of what makes it awesome is just the context, the way it's – because a lot of the movie is about the voices that people have. And a lot of the movie is aural, sound-oriented. So I think what gives that moment its power is the context. And – I guess I would almost have to say, to really appreciate it, you kind of have to watch the whole movie. So, sorry.
I'll make sure to get a babysitter so I can drag my wife to Anomalisa, a movie we may despise.
Well, Rob, you know, it is animated, so therefore kids can see it. I don't know if you know that, but if it's not live action, kids should go. Kids are totally allowed to see it. Yeah, so.
I feel like there was a generation that logic totally worked, but I think we're all a little too savvy these days for the old. It's animated. Kids will love it. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't take the kid. There's actually a very awkward sex scene in Anomalisa, so do not take your kids to Anomalisa. You will have some explaining to do if you do that.
Oh yeah. Now we're lucky if we get to the. I never used to go to movies by myself until I had kids, and then. I remember just being like, I gotta get out of here for a little bit, and I went and saw Iron Man, and I always thought it was so embarrassing to see a movie by yourself, but ooh, that's mostly how I go see movies these days. I either go with kids, or I go to the second run theater with my wife. There's a nice one in our area, or I'm just gonna go to the movies and just, you know, whatever happens, I'll see whatever.
And of course, Rob, you may not know this, you can watch them at home like on Netflix and stuff. That's always an option as well.
Wait, what?
I know.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
This future we live in is blowing my mind.
It's a miracle, right?
Well, Tom, I'll keep saying it. Thank you very, very, very much for taking the time out and talking with me. Everyone who's listening, if you are not subscribing to the Quarter to Three Movie Podcast and the Quarter to Three Games Podcast, you are missing out on just absolutely fabulous discussions of movies and games, and certainly games. Not just video games. You guys have been doing a lot with board games, and you guys did what was that card game?
The little solitaire thing on Arim or
what? The Carm, not Carmageddon.
Carmica.
Yeah. Which is always interesting to hear about something that was, you know, card games are never on my radar, but it's always cool to hear about the development process and the thought process. Yeah. And certainly hearing you and your co-host talk about movies, you guys are the only non making fun of bad movies podcast I listen to, and some people don't know this, but I will let out a secret. If I have telling you about a movie, or I say I've heard blank 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 about that movie, or my opinion is blank, I have probably just ripped you guys off and talked about what you said. So I'm living a lie, but hey, you know, it's worth listening to the show for everyone, so you can take those opinions too, I suppose.
Well, thank you. It's happy to be able to help you do that. Yeah.
All right, well, Tom, again, thank you again so much for talking with us. I hope you had a nice time too.
I enjoyed this, and thank you, and keep doing these. This is a great idea, and let's get at least another 50 of them going, Rob.
Okay, I will do my very, very best on that. All right, well, Tom, have a great night. Look forward to the movie next week, and otherwise, have a great rest of the week.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope everyone at home really enjoyed our discussion. I know I was really enthralled, and I was so thankful for Tom to be so gracious with his time. So, Tom, thanks again so much for your time. Now, for the rest of you, I'm pretty sure you had a great time with that because you didn't have to listen to me talk too much. You actually got to hear a professional. So, in any case, I hope that you take this opportunity to subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you haven't, if you are interested in sharing a song or talking about a song, well, feel free to email me at rob@playingoursong.net. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/playingoursong.net. Follow us on Twitter at @playing_oursong, where I'm averaging about 0.5 tweets a day. So that's not so bad. Hopefully going to get that a little higher. And don't forget, you can follow Tom on Twitter at the letter Q, the letter T, the number 3. And you can also check out his writing on his own website, quarter23.com, where you can find some fabulous, fabulous games news, games reviews, and movie reviews. And again, like I said in the show, if you're not listening to the Quarter to Three movie and games podcast, you are really, really missing out. So when you're done subscribing to mine, make sure you go and subscribe to Tom's. And then you've got hours of entertainment. So you're welcome, everybody. Very welcome. We'll be back next week with another episode in our Rob Ruary series. But until then, remember, it's your song. So play it long and play it loud. Bye, everyone.